right, welcome back, knuckleheads. This is the first new episode I'm recording in 2020, and we're starting with a good one. I had two guests in the studio today, so I hope you enjoyed this one. Collective Growth Designs is probably a firm you haven't heard of yet. They are a boutique coaching and advising company that aims to unlock our human potential. I know, sounds awesome. We dive into what exactly that means, who should be calling them, and more. This was a fun episode with Faith and her business partner, Marianne. Enjoy. All right, welcome back. Let's jump right on in. So, Faith, we'll start with you. So, how did you go from a store manager to working at a private equity firm to starting your own company and what you're doing now?
I started in retail when I was in high school. So, I started my retail journey in 2000. I was a sophomore in high school, wanted to make some extra money and buy the clothes that I wanted. And so I thought, okay, let's get a part-time job. I started working at Gap Inc. and I loved it. I really fell in love with the retail experience and the speed and the fashion. So stayed in retail for a really long time. Started in 2000 and did not leave the retail world until 2012. And throughout my retail journey, I worked for major brands such as Neiman Marcus, Lululemon Athletica, and Taylor Loft. And the entire time, just through this retail world, I had this feeling of, you know, there's something else that I need to be doing. And it never went away. It was this nagging feeling of, you know, go to school, pursue your dreams. But throughout my retail career, because I loved it and, you know, I'm probably biased, but I was pretty good at it. So I was promoted through the ranks and started leading teams. And I thought, well, why go to school when you're, you know, in your early 20s, making $50,000 a year and getting bonuses? So I let go of this idea of going back to school, because when you're in your 20s, you just think, wow, I've hit it. You know, I've made this money that I'm supposed to be making when I come out of school. But the feeling never went away of I wanted to pursue something bigger and better, at least for me. So while I was working at Lululemon Athletica, and it's an incredible company, they really focus on personal and professional development, I got really clear that I needed to finish my degree. And so in order to go back to school, I needed a job that would allow me to, I needed more flexibility. As a store manager, you work nights and weekends and holidays. So I thought, okay, I'm just going to be a barista. I love coffee. Starbucks is cool. Mm-hmm. It's easy. I don't have to lead anybody. I don't have to manage merchandising and following. I just didn't have to worry if I was going to be, you know, a Starbucks barista. Well, you put something out in the universe, you start thinking about it enough. And I believe in that things start to come into your lives for a reason. So I met Randy Eisenman. He's the founder of Satori Capital, one of the co-founders of Satori Capital. And I met him when I was working at Lululemon Athletica. And I remember he was looking for a personal assistant, somebody who could help with his kids and help with his life as he's managing a multi-strategy investment firm. He needed to unlock his time. So he needed a personal assistant. And I thought, okay, here it is. Here's my chance. I can run errands. I can, you know, pick up dry cleaning. I can help this wonderful person pursue his, you know, goals and dreams. And it would give me the complete flexibility to go back to school. Then I'm working for Randy and I love it so much. And of course, I just quickly immerse myself in the environment and I start helping to hire a few folks. I started focusing on co-designing and creating employee enrichment programs. I started focusing on ways that I could highlight and emphasize the great things that Satori was doing. And my way of doing that was beginning to apply for Best Places to Work awards because I really wanted to highlight the culture and the people. And so, of course, I found myself again leaving. First of all, I leave retail because I want to go back to school. I work as a personal assistant, completely changed my life. And I'm still not in school because I love what I'm doing at Satori Capital so much. So here we are in 2012, you know, 2015 through that 2012 through, I believe, 2017. I was with Satori for 5 years. I get toward the end of my career with Satori and I I still have this nagging feeling of go back to school, Faith. You have to go back to school. This little whisper, finish your degree, finish your degree. And so I decided to leave Satori Capital and pursue my Bachelor of Social Work. But I didn't lose my connection with Satori or Randy because they are just an integral part of my life. And I believe in what they're up to in the world. So I have stayed on their advisory board and I maintain some of my culture initiative work with them as well. And so I go back to school. I'm finishing my last semester with my Bachelor of Social Work. We'll move into a master's in the fall of 2020. And then I think, well, I still need to do something. And I've always had this entrepreneurial spirit. You know, I admire entrepreneurs. I admire risk takers. I admire just the, you know, what I believe to be true about the entrepreneurial world. So I thought, okay, well, Satori is retaining me as a, you know, as a contractor. Well, okay, that's really cool. How about I do that for other companies?
Yeah.
And so Collective Growth Designs was born in 2017. And I really just had a few clients at the time. And decided it was a worthy effort to pursue unlocking human potential in the workplace and using the workplace as a platform for human development. And so throughout the process of my degree work, my schoolwork, and helping some really cool clients in Fort Worth, I started to see this effect we were having on companies. And Marianne and I were, of course, we're still friends at this time, and we developed this really great relationship. And one day she called me and she knew I was doing, you know, I had Collective Growth Designs and we had a coaching relationship as well. And she called me and said, you know, are you ready to work together? Are you ready to do this? And of course, there was a moment of panic, but it quickly went away because I'm like, this is Marianne Means Dufresne. Of course. Yes, let's do this. So then Collective Growth Designs was not just Faith. It became Faith and Marianne. We are partners in the business. And so we are both working very diligently and thoughtfully to unlock human potential and elevate business.
Yeah, let's get into that a little bit. Yeah. Can you talk a little bit about people reaching their, or what a human potentialist is in corporate America?
Yeah. So in general, we can start with a foundation of what a human potentialist is. And it's someone who sees the ability for people to grow throughout the course of their life. And that's not just children thinking about how do kids grow and what's a child development model, but this is older adults and how we have the capacity to grow from any age. So our potential never stops, that truly there is unlimited potential in all of us. And so to make that live in a person, to be a human potentialist, and I have to give Faith credit because she introduced me to that term, and I'm so now proud to wear it myself, is that we believe anywhere we go that there's untapped potential in every person, even a top leader, that there is some way that this person has giftings and has potentiality to pursue that make them and make the people around them and make the world better.
So you're an assistant at Satori. I guess, how did you get into what you're doing now? Like, did you see an opportunity within the firm, within their portfolio companies? Can you kind of shine some light on how that whole process came to happen?
Yes. So Satori Capital is founded upon the principles of conscious capitalism. And one of the pillars of conscious capitalism is a conscious culture. And so I realized that, and it wasn't, I didn't realize it while I was at Satori, but I had the opportunity to really nurture that and to develop initiatives that supported people personally and professionally. So during my time with Satori, Randy and I co-created an initiative titled, it's called the Optimal Living Initiative. And we focused on the four most important dimensions of well-being: mental, physical, emotional, and spiritual well-being. Of course, financial is in there as well, but we decided here are four dimensions that are really important to personal and professional development. And that's really where I was able to tap into a side of work that I love doing that felt so natural, and it was propelling and supporting human development. And so that was the awakening of, okay, there's something to this, and you know, it's a gift to me to be able to do it, and then hopefully to those around me.
When you can I?
Yeah, go for it.
You had an incredible background to support that. I mean, Lululemon and everything that they've created over time, and their structure really uniquely prepared you for that. And I don't know of that many other organizations that have been as progressive as they have. And so whether you had planned it or not, it was just ripe to come out.
Well, thank you. I do love, thank you. My entire life, even as a little girl, I've always been in service of others. That was instilled in me by my father, my mother and father. My dad was in the Army. So I've always been, how do I serve others? How do I see the highest and best in people and then provide a platform or an environment or support to really help people grow? And of course, we have a built-in audience in the workplace. We you know, the majority of us have to collect a paycheck. So why not pursue purpose over profit in some cases? And profit will come. It's a byproduct of an incredible purpose and an incredible organization. And so my life is dedicated to serving other people. And we find that we can be of great service to organizations and leaders and the entire ecosystem.
Yeah, let's get into that a little bit. So you've been out doing this for 2-3 years now. Who are, I guess, your ideal client? And kind of can you shine some light on what some of those results have been for the ones that you have worked with over the past couple of years?
Yeah, an ideal client for us. We love to focus on possibilities. We also know that any of us, whether it's our personal life or our work life, there are things that rub us the wrong way, things that hold us back, things that can become blocks for us. And often those things point us toward the need for a solution. So for the majority of our clients, it's not, we want to work with people, of course, who say, we see all the possibilities, help us get there. And that does happen. But primarily people will say, we're in pain in this way. Yeah. Our sales have dipped. We've got a monster of a director we really need your help with. Whatever it is that is a pain point for an organization or a person, they initially will reach out over that issue. And then it's our job to use our three-part process of inquiring. So spending time in inquiry, immersing ourselves in the organization to determine, is the presenting problem the actual problem? And usually it's so multifaceted. And it's not just people-oriented, it's normally also process-oriented. So spending that time with them and being in the business with people to then design the right solution and be present with them to integrate the solution to create sustainability. So our ideal client is any organization with a potential pain point, but also the passion to do the work to solve for it, yeah, which requires a becoming more than just a fixing. Mm-hmm. So there's immediately attention to processes that need to be cleaned up, or a strategy issue that needs to be addressed. The marketplace has shifted, whatever it is. But the process of building sustainability and creating success that we ultimately can is about changing how we're addressing the world, really.
Yeah.
That was great, Marianne.
Thank you.
We're really practicing how to answer that question mm-hmm. because what we want to jump to is our ideal client is if you're living and breathing and you're running an organization and there's human beings there, then we want to be a part of it. And to just add on to what Marianne said, you know, we have found that there are a lot of people that are compelled to change, don't necessarily know how. They're experiencing a pain point, but see the possibilities, and they want to partner with us as a true partner in the work. Or they just don't have the capacity mm-hmm. anymore to say, you know, we have this vision, and or they see a vision and they need to get there, and we need somebody who can, you know, execute and facilitate us moving toward that vision, and they don't have current capacities, and so mm-hmm. you know, we can go in and support.
Yeah. Along the same lines, I've had a few different consultants, some are sales consultants. Everybody seems to specialize in one thing mm-hmm. or another. I'd be interested to hear your perspective on what separates you guys. Is it the process that you guys mm-hmm. go through, mm-hmm. how immersive it is? I'd be interested to hear your take on that.
Yeah. Go ahead, Marianne.
The two main things that set us apart are, as you mentioned, the immersive nature of the work. So we're not coming in once a week for an hour, or coming in and doing an assessment and then from 5 states away determining how the team should proceed. We are engaged in the workplace, acting as an extension of the leadership team and moving the solution forward. One of the things that we provide, whether and people don't see it, that they experience it, is modeling leadership mm-hmm. in the organization. So we're a part of meetings. We are doing executive coaching, integral coaching. So that would be one of the things that is unique about us. And secondly, that we are not simply people focused, though that is not simple. It's also how are people operating within the systems,
okay.
And primarily communication, technology, and accountability. So those are the areas that get quick attention, but I want to hear what you add.
Well, there's still a reaction to this when I say it. And quite honestly, I like when we get reactions because I'm either thinking, okay, we're onto something, or this is not socializing, right? I mean, it's people who, I haven't heard of that, or that sounds weird, or that doesn't sound like it's going to work. And that revs me up in a good way. So the other part that makes us different is we really do take a therapeutic approach to our work. And we are not therapists, although I am pursuing my master's in social work. And then I will become a licensed clinical social worker at some point. And then also getting an MBA. So it's like we have, you know, Marianne's background. She has an undergraduate in psychology, a master's in public administration. So we blend this idea of a therapeutic approach in that, how do we really take care of people in the workplace? How do we allow people to thrive and to flourish? And sometimes that does take a very thoughtful, dynamic, understanding approach that might feel very different than other consultants that you would meet. So we're people first and process second, but we know that they are 100% interlinked. Our environment informs how we behave, how we feel and think, and how we feel and think in the workplace will inform our performance. And at the end of the day, we are ever evolving human beings that need ongoing personal and professional coaching and growth development opportunities. So,
well, and then social work or in the areas of therapy, a therapeutic alliance, quote unquote, first and foremost requires building trust. And that's exactly what we see. And part of the word therapeutic and its meaning for us is that we spend time in the space and honor people and where they are in their mm-hmm. lives and in their experiences enough to build that trust.
Yeah, you mentioned something I have not heard or really discussed much of, and that's modeling leadership. Mm-hmm. Can you kind of explain what you meant by that?
Sure. So one of the things that we do with clients being in the workspace is attend their meetings. And so we begin by modeling what is leadership behavior. The phone is put away. We're giving eye contact to people around the room. When we initiate work with a client, often we see that a lot of people in the room are disengaged. And this could even be a group of leaders. So what does it look like to be a leader in a room? I'm taking notes, and it's a gradual process, but within a month to 6 weeks, we've gained permission from the leader in the room to offer coaching in the moment and hold some space when they say something really crappy. Well, you know, okay, hang on, let's talk through this, John, or let's talk through this, Susan. You know, what are you expecting people to say to that comment? Because if you're wanting them to give you feedback, maybe try asking it in a way that's more open-ended. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, if we're coaching people in the room, in addition to being in that room with them, bringing up later, okay, I saw that when your leader said this particular thing, you got triggered and you sat back in your chair mm-hmm. and did not engage. Tell me more about what you were experiencing then. How is that going to work for you? And really paying attention to those things that are really social behaviors and showing how who we are. And so we're modeling it and we're giving people the attention to course correct
gotcha.
And get a different outcome.
So you guys have likely worked with a number of different companies over the past few years. I'd be interested to hear your take on the biggest room for improvement that you have seen kind of across the board going into the new decade from a skill standpoint. Is it communication? Is it things like that or something else?
What would you say?
This is this has been really fun for Marianne and I to decide what our highest and best is in the work that we do for clients, because we are always aligned, and how we get there can look different, but the arrival point is the same. So for me, you know, I think conscious dialogue is a huge opportunity and often overlooked, that dialogue and let's call it interpersonal communication dialogue. We say conscious dialogue. You know, it's an unlocker for companies to break down barriers so you can really move toward a solution. There's conscious dialogue and just interpersonal dynamics, the nuances within the environment, being ready and able and willing to explore those, and having leaders and not just, you know, leaders to me, it's not by title, but it's just how you show up in the workplace. Yes, we all can carry different titles, and that really translates into our scope of responsibility, but we're all leaders. So I think a huge opportunity, and often it becomes a pain point, is you're putting so many boundaries on communication when we really need to figure out how can we dialogue openly and elevate our ability to communicate consciously. And so it's a very people forward, a very humanistic approach in the workplace. So people and systems, yeah. What would you say?
Yeah, I would 100% agree. And that I've stopped being shocked. I've started expecting it, but it was shocking to me. Whether it's a global corporate organization or a tiny startup, people do not have agendas for their meetings. People aren't being held accountable for what they said that they would do. Really basic, you know, task items. So that brings so much clarity and actually so much freedom and answers so many questions for people, that once we can put those basics in place of, hey, let's talk to the person that you're having the issue with and really have a safe conversation here around it. And let's bring some order to your work. It just opens up incredible possibilities.
Yeah. So systems of accountability, processes, interpersonal communication and dialogue, conscious dialogue. You know, it's an ecosystem of, you know, when you look at the top performing companies in all these different various and how we measure successful companies, you know, we need clarity around what we're doing day in and day out. So we need job clarity, we need role clarity, we need accountability, we need great performance reviews, although people will argue those are old and outdated. And I am doing research that will hopefully say performance reviews are great if you do them really well. Mm-hmm. And if you know how to model that, and if you know how to really support somebody's development personally and professionally. So
have you started that? Or I guess I've been in corporate America 8-9 years, yeah, and somehow like fallen through the cracks on performance reviews.
Yeah.
And I haven't had too many of them.
Yeah.
So I'd be interested, have you started any of that and seen that they are helpful or aren't?
So I just submitted, super nerdy, but I submitted to the UTA IRB, my IRB, the process of beginning the real research with people. So I will begin uncovering it. I have a hunch that, and there's a great research through Gallup that talks about performance reviews and why they are typically not working, and often it's the way they are set up. Or the worst part about performance review is when somebody's not prepared. You have a leader that's giving you a performance review and they literally just prepared the night before, and it's not meaningful. So here you're getting feedback or not getting feedback, but either way, it doesn't work when it's not meaningful, not thought out, or you're not receiving feedback at all. So I have seen what a great performance review can do. Or let's call it a performance reflection or optimal performance. But I've seen organizations do it really well and what it has done for their people. And so I do believe there are ways and methods that we can figure out how to do it better. And I'll be interviewing hopefully 30 people that are either administering performance reviews or they are the designers of them and trying to understand their approach. And I'll start that in just about a month.
Nice. I have one person that might be good. He was a previous guest. He works at Virgin Orbit on their learning and development team.
Oh, great.
And, he's the only other person that's mentioned Gallup. So he might be somebody good to interview.
I would love that. Thanks, Matt.
No problem.
Yeah. Did you have anything to add, Marianne?
Just that a performance review shouldn't be a one-time event. It should be a system. And we can think about performance reviews being that term, being the container that holds ongoing coaching. which is actually what helps people grow.
That's right.
Not an annual, here's the things you did wrong.
Right.
Yeah.
See you later.
Yeah. Are you seeing when they're successfully implemented every like 6 months? Like how often are they,
should they be? It's fine. I want to hear Faith's perspective. It's fine to have an annual review, but it should create some sort of tracking mechanism that lives throughout the year is a goal setting first and foremost, and that you are tracking with quarterly deliverables. So there may be a formal conversation every quarter, or it may be that you're really keeping this top of mind at every weekly one-on-one.
That's right.
Yeah.
But that it should be worked on, and it should be the kind of thing that you see progress toward over the course of a year.
Right.
Very good.
She agrees.
Yeah. I agree. So that's I agree with your perspective. It's mine as well.
All right. What books or resources would you recommend somebody that's interested in the topic or maybe is doing it from, I guess, a self-development perspective?
I read everything that Faith tells me to read. So Faith,
which topic? Just development
or
personal development?
Personal development, reaching, I guess, their human potential. Maybe they don't have a super structured environment. Any books or resources that might be easier for somebody to look up?
Yes, I have over time become a very avid reader, and some of that is because it's required in my research. But other than that, I have felt a shift in my life because of the, you know, I read and then I apply. I read and practice, and you know, so I actually have a list in front of me.
Right.
I didn't know this was going to be a question, but I'm glad I have it. So these are some of the books that are on my desk right now, and I have found all of them to help in some way. So
If you'll send me the list, you all included in the show
good.
Notes.
Yeah. Well, do you want me to read some of them?
Yeah, for sure.
Let's see. Good to Great, obviously, is an incredible. It's really more on an organizational level, but there's tips about great leadership.
Mindset. For sure.
Carol Dweck. By Carol Dweck. Leadership embodiment. So Marianne was talking earlier about modeling leadership. Leadership embodiment talks about including your physiology, knowing that our bodies actually allow our somatic response to life also informs how we show up in the world. So physiologically is important to understand as well. Self-determination theory. Of course, some of these books are related to what I'm reading right now, but nurturing resilience. One that I'm loving right now is the 12 Rules for Life. Altered States of Consciousness is very interesting.
I would toss in for people that are interested in systematizing a little bit in simple ways is Traction. It's the Entrepreneurial Organization System.
I've been meaning to read that one.
Read it. It's such an easy read because it's the story of how it all happens and the impact it can make on a business. But it's a great reminder that we often think, to be successful, I need to be a completely different person, or my business needs to look completely differently. And actually, it's some really simple changes that you can make and practices over time and how much that builds traction and how many things can change over the course of a year. And I need to memorize this quote, but the people overestimate how much they can accomplish in a day and significantly underestimate how much they can accomplish in a year or in a lifetime or whatever it is. And man, is that the truth, that making small changes and setting intentions and building those things into our calendar create change over time that's really impactful.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's wrap up here with a few easy ones. I bet between the two of you, you've probably interviewed a ton of different people over the years. Be interested to hear your favorite interview question.
I really like to know what people do outside of the workplace.
Yeah.
And so it really allows them to answer it however they want to, however they feel comfortable. But I just say, you know, when you're not working, what's life like for you? And we asked that question today to a couple of candidates that were interviewing for a position for Hotel Drover. And, you know, I got to know kind of her value system, and I got to know about her 10-month-old little girl, and that, you know, she and her husband love cooking together, and she prefers to bake. So I really enjoy getting to know the whole person. And so that's it. That, you know, tell me about what life is like for you outside of work. And then I do love Oprah's question. And sometimes, you know, I don't always ask this depending on the person, but I think maybe I might be getting it wrong, but she says the question she asks at the end of her interviews is, what do you know to be true? And it can go all sorts of ways, but I think it's more philosophical for some people, but I just really like to get to know somebody. I see you have a resume in front of you, you have skill sets, I understand all of that. I can generally tell if somebody would do exceptionally well in a position, but I want to get to know you as a person.
Mm-hmm. And I relate to that too. And I like to ask someone, if you could build the perfect job for you, what would it be? And through that, you hear what they're most excited about and the dimensions of themselves that they want to explore to a greater degree.
Yeah, I like that. Nobody had given that one, so.
There we go.
Yeah, yeah, you.
Yeah,
good job.
Absolutely. All right, we can wrap up here. So if somebody is listening in and they want to reach out to you guys, what is the best way for them to get a hold of you?
Faith's cell phone is 817. Just kidding.
I think it might be listed on the website. You know, yes. Go to the website, collectivegrowthdesigns.com, and or I'm on Facebook, we're on Instagram, we're fairly connected in the community, so you will just ask around. But I'm happy to give my cell phone out.
All right, I'll put that in the show notes.
Yeah,
perfect.
Nice. Yes.
All right, thank you both for coming on.
Thank you for having us, Matt.
We appreciate you. Yes.
Thanks for giving the show a listen. Please do me a favor before you stop listening. Subscribe on whatever platform you're on. If you loved it so much and you've already subscribed, share this episode with a friend. Thanks again, and I'll see you next week.
Matt McGee is an employee of Frost Insurance. All opinions shared by Matt or guests of the Healthy Conversations podcast are solely their own and do not reflect the opinions of Frost Insurance or Frost Bank. This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon for insurance, banking, or investment advice. Healthy Conversations with Matt McGee is brought to you by Straight Up Podcasts.